Have you ever had someone refer to something going on in the community who asked you, what's going on there? What's the story with all that? The right answer lies with the people directly involved in it, the people who know. Why not hear their story? So welcome to What's the Story, Pekin? I'm Gary Gillis, your host, and I hope you enjoy this Pekin podcast. Well, in recent podcasts, we interviewed a local legend, Jim Deverman, and he talked about his experiences with the John F. Kennedy funeral back in November of 1963. I thought I'd share with you in kind of a reprise of a program I gave recently to Rotary on the 60th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination, because while a lot of people know the whole story behind the assassination, they've seen the Zapruder film, there's been books galore on the topic, perhaps are unfamiliar with the detail that went into the planning of a state funeral, which is one for the ages, and did that all within 3 days of the assassination. Really, to understand how that all came about, you have to fast forward or actually step back to over 100 years prior to the assassination in the 1860s. The Arlington Cemetery, where John F. Kennedy was eventually buried, at the time was part of the Robert E. Lee Mansion. It was his property. Of course, he sided with the Confederacy, and we know the story of him being a famous Confederate general. However, that didn't play well in Washington, D.C., or the leadership at the time. And at that time, there was a brigadier general by the name of Montgomery Meigs. Meigs Field in Chicago was actually named in his honor. And Meigs was a quartermaster, and he didn't appreciate what Lee had done, considered him a traitor, as did many, and wanted in some way to exact some kind of vengeance on Lee. So he came up with the idea that, you know, Lee, after this war is over, will return to his mansion right here in sight of Washington, D.C., and that didn't settle well with Meigs, and decided he would convert it to a cemetery, a place where Lee would not care to return to, and in fact, he never did. Lee himself is buried in Lexington, Virginia. So the Arlington National Cemetery became the icon and the historic treasure that it is today, in part out of an act of vengeance by a Union general. I share that story because in March of 1963, there was a young gentleman by the name of Paul Fuqua, who was a National Parks employee. And he's working that evening, and a bald gentleman ran into his office and said, "The president is coming, the president is coming." Fuqua himself thought, "This is some kind of nutcase. I'm going to have to chase him around the cemetery." And he turned around to leave and follow the gentleman, and there standing in his presence was the leader of the free world, John F. Kennedy. Kennedy was there just spontaneously wanting a tour of Arlington Cemetery, and especially the Lee Mansion. He had not been there. He knew the story behind it. Paul Fuqua walked him through, gave him a quick tour, and they went outside to look at the vast vista before him of Washington, D.C. in the evening. And standing next to him, Kennedy looked out, stood there quite some time, and then said, "I could stay here forever." Of course, 9 months later, he had passed, and the question immediately upon the president's assassination was, where will you bury him? Well, it was pretty much assumed, and Kennedy himself felt he would end up in Boston, where he was born and raised, in Brookline, where he was born, and where his son Patrick had just been buried just a little more than a month prior to the assassination. And Kennedy was resigned to that fact. He just knew, well, that's probably where I'll go, not knowing it would happen to him at age 46. So happens that at the time, part of the inner circle of the White House thought perhaps there is another site. And Robert F. McNamara, who was Secretary of Defense, had the bold idea of maybe considering Arlington Cemetery. At that time, the superintendent of Arlington Cemetery, a gentleman by the name of John Metzler, had started to stake out possible sites, knowing that perhaps it could be a point of consideration for the Kennedy family, which in fact is what happened. The day after the assassination, Metzler had looked at a number of sites and was visited then by McNamara, who took the idea as three different sites, one of them which was near where Kennedy had stood just 9 months prior to that. Sites were chosen in different locations, and Robert McNamara then went back to the Kennedy family and wanted them to take a look at the cemetery. Jackie and then Robert Kennedy and his two sisters, Pat Lawford and Eunice Shriver, came and stood in the rain and looked at the different locations. They came to the site at the foot of the Lee Mansion. Jackie stood there for 15 minutes and then nodded her approval and said, "This is where it will be." Robert F. Kennedy said he wanted to be at the access so that it would be a direct line between the mansion and the Lincoln Memorial. Metzler put a stake into the ground and said, "This is where we'll start our work." The next day, Metzler was there with a crew, and McNamara met them as well. Metzler measured and found out that the place where he put the stake was just 6 inches away from the final location. It was a 600-foot burial plot with 12 granite stones set aside. Mrs. Kennedy had another request, however. She wanted to have an eternal flame. She had witnessed that at the Arc de Triomphe in Paris and thought that would be a fitting tribute to her husband's memory. Of course, the problem was, how do you do something like this? How do you construct it? And how do you find someone with the talent and expertise to do so on a Sunday afternoon? Of course, at the time, they looked in the Yellow Pages and, after several calls, found someone who thought he could find some way to jerry-rig this eternal flame. Turned out they got quarter-inch copper tubing and raised a basket 18 inches off the ground, ran the tubing to a location behind a fence where someone could then turn on the gas to what was a Hawaii luau torch that they put in the spot temporarily. They figured this would work until they came up with a permanent solution. They tested it, they lit it, and whoosh, it lit, and so it was ready for the funeral. There are famous photos of Mrs. Kennedy actually lighting that torch, and the eternal flame, of course, still exists to this day. Mrs. Kennedy had other plans as well. She was selective in the music that she would choose. She wanted muffled drums, and if you look at any kind of video footage of the funeral procession, you'll hear the marching drums followed by Chopin's funeral march. She also wanted bagpipes because the president was proud of his Irish lineage, and actually during his presidency took great pride in having visited Ireland and the home of his ancestors. His brother-in-law, Sergeant Shriver, was in charge of the funeral, and the details quickly fell into place. She wanted to make sure that the person who had been assassinated in a town in Dallas would go out of this world with a funeral for the ages, and wanted to do something befitting of the president's legacy. Of course, the problem was they needed to now make sure they had everything in place for the procession itself, which would be a military color guard. It was the old guard, as it was called. There actually was a group that practiced this, that were prepared for this. They knew there had other aging presidents, Herbert Hoover, Harry Truman, and Dwight Eisenhower, knowing they'd be called upon perhaps to ask in that capacity. And little did they expect their young president to be the one that they would apply their talent and trade to. They got the call to be prepared for this, and they put together a color guard that would consist of 3 soldiers, 2 Marines, 2 sailors, 1 airman, and 1 member of the Coast Guard. And Coast Guard, if you recall, is the branch of service that Jim Devereaux was part of. So they had to be prepared and practice. While they did this 4 times a year, they knew this would be something that would be a global scene and be watched closely. So in preparation for that, the man in charge, First Lieutenant Samuel R. Byrd, decided to put his men through the paces to make sure they'd be prepared and do everything and pull it off perfectly. They met and spent hours until midnight the night before practicing and folding the flag. It had to be sharp. It had to be crisp. No one could delay in any way. No one could risk dropping it. They practiced that, and then Byrd took the group out to the cemetery, and in the Tomb of the Unknown Plaza, there are steps. And he knew of the 36 steps, Jim referred to that in his podcast, that they would have to carry a 1,300-pound casket down. That came out to 144 pounds per person. Think and imagine how that would have been and how difficult that would be. wanted to make sure they pulled it off to the point where they show no strain. And of course, they would keep the casket level and do the president proud. So they went and practiced carrying a casket full of sandbags up and down the amphitheater steps. Bird was not happy with their effort, so he climbed on top of the casket and told them to do it again. They did it several times. He still was not satisfied. And there had been a member of the Tomb of the Unknown color guard that he brought over and had them, with this one person, climb on top of the casket with him and said, okay, I don't know if we'll be ready, but we'll take it up in the morning. So the next morning, they prepared to go to the Capitol Rotunda where the president had lied in state. There had been hundreds of thousands of people that had been through before that. And because of the large crowd, the bus that was carrying them, which was a bus with no seats, because there was no way they would risk wrinkling their pants. Everything had to look crisp and pure. So they got the last quarter mile, they got off the bus and marched to the Capitol, prepared, of course, then to take the president on his final journey. Bird gathered the group around for a prayer, and he was concerned that they would be able to pull this off. And he said, "Dear Lord, please give us the strength to do this last thing for the president." He looked at those gathered and said, "Okay, let's move." And of course, if you look at a video that exists of the procession heading down the Capitol steps, it was pulled off perfectly. You remember perhaps Blackjack, which was the horse, the riderless horse. It was part of a ceremony. The caisson had been the same one that had carried Abraham Lincoln, and they were determined to replicate a lot of what had been done for the Lincoln funeral. And Blackjack was somewhat of an active horse, and they were concerned. He was a little bit hyper, and the gentleman, the PFC that took along Blackjack was a PFC by the name of Arthur Carlson. And Carlson had said he had basically two things to decide. He knew that Blackjack would be a little bit of a bit to handle, and so he had to decide between keeping his posture or keeping in step. And if you see the video, he stays in step, but you see the horse who was spooked by a gate that slammed shut at the beginning of the procession. You can see him bobbing up and down. One time, Blackjack actually stepped on Carlson's foot, but he doesn't break stride. And to this day, he still says that he's amazed he was able to pull that off. What kept him to the task was the knowledge that if this horse gets away from me in this funeral, I will end up marching guard duty in Greenland. So watch the video. You'll see that. It's an interesting side story to this this event. Of course, everything was pulled off. It went without a hitch. You can listen again to Jim's interview and what he participated and was part of that. What a lot of people don't remember is the fact that when it was all done and the cameras went off, the media stayed around. They were hoping to get a photo of the president being lowered into the ground. That photo doesn't exist. That video doesn't exist because John Metzler, the superintendent of Arlington Cemetery, did not want them to capture that for history. So he basically just called the local power company and said, kill the power to everything in Arlington Cemetery. They did. They weren't able to run their camera feed, and eventually the media left, and they lowered the president to his final resting place. So that's a little bit of the story about the preparation for a state funeral for the ages. Check on video and watch and see part of it, and just experience the wonder of this event that did the president proud, that was highly dignified, a great solemn occasion, again, a historic occasion, and it went off without a hitch. So thank you for listening, this little sidebar to Jim Deverman's story. And as always, thank you for participating in our podcasts. Thank you to the Pekin Library for providing us the space. Thank you to Mike Eaton for providing the recordings and our sound guy with this. Again, send us your thoughts or ideas and comments to pekinpodcast@gmail.com. And thanks and have a great day.